Welcome to It's Amazing Radio on this beautiful Sunday day. All beautiful in California. I don't know what Lavender Gooms is dealing with.
We're dealing with on and off rain since yesterday, so really shitty.
Well, sucks to be you. As you can tell, Lavender Gooms is back for this episode. We also got DJ Mark with us, and old reliable Kid Presentable's in the house as well.
Ayo.
And I'm Dr. Law. Let's take you through some MMA, guys.
We're not even going to mention that Bobby cut the music right at the best part, confirming that he's not a true Dragon Ball Z fan.
I gotta say, he should have let it go the whole minute and a half, but...
You gotta at least get that guitar riff. He's cut it right there. Oh, Bobby.
Okay, I'm sorry. But, like, we gotta start. You gotta tell me next time. We gotta make sure this one gets in.
We have so much to talk about.
All that means is that music is going to get used again, and it's going to be given its due proper justice and respect.
Well, we're just going to have one episode where we play the whole song multiple times.
Just know that song was chosen in honor of Marcus Brimage's win yesterday.
Yep.
What up, Marcus Brimage? Maybe one day you'll listen to us.
Yeah, maybe. All right, lots of stuff happened. Let's start with Friday night. Let's get the Ultimate Fighter show out of the way, because now that there's real fighting on, you know, full cards, it's not as big a deal. But what were the names of the two guys who fought? This isn't a good sign.
Fink, Pinchel, and Joe Proctor?
No, Proctor that was won. The guy that won last week. It was Chris...
No, Proctor last week.
Coffer, Chris Cope? Coffer?
Yeah.
Chris Cope.
It was a good fight, though. All seriousness.
We're clearly big fans of the show.
I pretty much ignore everything up until the fight at this point.
Well, I mean, in fairness, there was a lot of MMA this weekend. There was a lot more than we've been used to for the last 6 weeks, so.
Yeah. But Pinchel and Kofor had a surprisingly entertaining fight, considering the way it was portrayed. It was going to be Kofor just trying to take him down the whole time. But it ended up being a fairly competitive battle. And Pinchel got an arm triangle choke in the third round.
Yeah, I gotta say, leading up to the fight, I thought Pinchel was gonna murder Kofor just because it seemed like the way they were portraying Kofor, he looked like he was terrified to fight Pinchel. When he got called out, he just kind of looked like he wanted to shit his pants when he found out who he was fighting.
Yeah. That's what I kind of agree with you. But yeah, it was pretty good. The only other part of that episode that I remember at all was the English guy crying a lot. And then Dominic and Uriah got into it. Okay, yeah, that's all that happened. Anybody got anything else?
I want to like this show, but you guys know I haven't seen like the last 4 episodes, I think it is. I think we talked about it last week, Bob, but I represent the segment of the MMA fan base that does not like to be home on Friday. So, yeah, to UFC and Tough and all UFX people, Friday is not a good night for fights.
And something that's kind of sad, I just wanted to go to sleep. And it was 10 o'clock, and I was like, oh, I got to stay awake. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, if that's sad, then it's sadder that I fell asleep during the Ultimate Fighter. During the fight, I fell asleep.
I really like the live fight, though. I think if like they put this on a Wednesday, I'd love it, quite frankly. That was such a good night for it, I thought.
Yeah, Friday's not a good TV night.
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, Friday is kind of the... You know, with other shows, especially on broadcast TV, Friday's kind of like the death knell for it. That's where network television, they put shows that they know isn't going to draw a lot, or shows that used to be good, and they put it on Fridays because they kind of have to. But I got to agree with Steph. I mean, the only reason I watched this episode was because I got home at about 1:45 in the morning, and I was flipping through the channels to see what was on, and, you know, it was 15 minutes into the Ultimate Fighter, so I decided to stay up an extra 45 to see it.
I mean, hopefully they switch it to a new day of the week. Because my understanding is, like, the UFC doesn't really want to put it on Friday either. But FX, I'm sure, is just happy they somehow got a million people watching FX on Friday nights now. Because it's Friday nights, and you're getting anybody to watch a million people to watch anything. they're pretty satisfied with. But I think the UFC would probably much rather be on middle of the week. I think everybody would be happier with that.
Well, I mean, honestly, what does Fex have Wednesday at 10 that they couldn't just put it in the middle of the week?
I don't know. What time is that the Justified show on?
Oh, that could be it. They have a whole slew of shows I don't watch that could be they got playing damages. At that time.
I don't know. Yeah. I just watch Archer and I watch Archer, The League, and Unsupervised. Those were all on Thursday.
I catch Sonny reruns every now and then.
Well, God forbid they bump the Sonny reruns on FX, The Ultimate Fighter.
All right. We also had Bellator 60, let's say 3. Is everybody okay with that?
66? I'm fine with that.
All right, sure.
You can say whatever you want, you can say whatever you want, Bob, but the answer is 66.
All right. 63 in my heart. Three of those didn't count. But, all right, we had a, I mean, we had some, actually some interesting fights on this. Rick Hahn fought Lloyd Woodard, which was entertaining because Woodard kept trying to talk Rick Hahn into brawling with him and talking shit. And eventually he decided the best plan was to lunge at him with his face, with his chin up and his hands down. And then he got knocked out for his efforts.
Rick Hahn becoming a beast at 155.
Yeah.
He was already pretty good at 185. Wasn't too bad there. It wasn't as... Oh, no, 170, sorry. And this is 155, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant, sorry. 170. He's always looked good. I don't know how he wins all these fights, though. Just his hand... I swear to God, he's putting rocks in his hands.
Yeah.
Because any time he touches someone with his fist, they just drop unconscious.
Yeah, I don't get it. Because he's a judo guy. That's... He's not even doing that well taking guys down. That's the part that's impressive to me. I think he just lied about his resume. He has really powerful fists. He's just a guy with powerful fists.
So he didn't actually go to the Olympics, Bob?
No, it was some other guy. Just looked like him.
They photoshopped him in some pictures, and now they're like, well, this looks legit.
They're like, it looks close enough. There was also Brian Rogers, who got himself knocked out because he was committed to winning by... flying knee for some reason. Like, there's a couple times he could have beaten the Swedish guy.
What was his Spang.
Name? Spang. I thought he could have beaten Spang at least 3 different times, and he just kept going for flying knees. And then he got knocked out for his trouble.
Yeah.
It looked like he was trying to get on SportsCenter with all those flying knees, and quite frankly, I was kind of happy he got caught. He deserved it.
Someone.
I don't know if he deserved it, but
I think Brian Rogers stole a cab from somebody at some point.
I kind of felt bad for Spung because like when he came out to the crowd, there was such a hometown bias for Brett Rogers. Everyone was booing him and shit. And then when he actually knocked out Rogers, like everyone was like stunned silence. You can tell like his emotions completely got over him when he flipped off the crowd. Because you can tell he didn't really have any, like, real... I mean, he didn't really care they're booing him, but, like, there's so much animosity towards him when he won. It's just like, oh, F you guys. How dare you not believe in me?
Dude, that guy has a problem, though, because at the weigh-ins, he shakes hands with Rogers.
That wasn't him. Was that him? I don't think that was Sprung that did that.
Yeah, it was, because then afterwards he...
That was Sprung? Oh, yeah, you're right. No, it wasn't. Okay, he does have a problem.
So Spong, Spang, whatever his name is. The Swedish Spang. Guy. Spang. He shakes hands with Rogers.
Talking about this guy.
Yeah, he shakes hands with him. They face off. And then because they're facing off, he shoves Rogers. And then after this fight, he faces off with Falcao, which is the next opponent. And because they're facing off, for some reason, he shoves him again. I don't think he understands. Facing off is part of the game in this job of his.
Well, that's his trigger, Bobby.
You're too close, man. You're too close.
The chicken egg thing is people getting too close to Sprung, and that's why he's pushing them. I mean, maybe they're doing this. They shouldn't get in his face. You get in his face, you get pushed. That's the rules now.
I just want to cut real quickly to Stefan DeGlossen, the official statistics provider for this podcast. How many different ways have we said this guy's name?
We got properly Spang, Spong, Sprung, Spung, and Sprang. We got 5, folks. We got 5 ways to say this one dude's name so far.
And that's why I call him the Swede.
Swedish dude.
Well, let's just get to the main event, because that was really the most important.
Because there's literally nothing else to talk about.
Yeah, really. What else do you got? That's pretty much it.
It's the next fight.
It was an important fight. Some people thought it was important because it was a rematch of Eddie Alvarez with Shinya Aoki. Other people thought it was important because I had a $5 bet with Lavender Gooms over who the winner would be. And I gave him Aoki with 3-1 odds.
Yeah, what was funny about that was before we made the bet, it was about a 5-10 minute texting of me just bashing Shinya Aoki. And then you give me 3-1 odds on him, and I just can't refuse that. You have to take 3-1 odds.
Especially in a $5 bet. That's some high money stakes right there.
Seriously. for people,
you know, it was an interesting fight. I was speaking to Mark about this a little earlier. It's truly probably the biggest fight Bellator's really had. For all these things they call their super fights, the biggest fight they've had in terms of the credentialed opponents.
This was the first
came
one
from
was
a completely non-title fight. So it was good
totally
to see.
Agree.
Definitely. I mean, it was arguably a fight between two top 10 lightweights. I mean, not by our rankings, but.
I'm not sure about anybody else's rankings anymore either. I think
somebody does.
All
right, well, going into the fight, people still considered Aoki a top 10. I'm so glad that in 2 months he won't be in our top 10. But
now that you say that, we'll see about that. You're going to watch him move up in my rankings, then.
Yeah, he's going to go back to Japan. He's going to fight about 6 Japanese tomato cans, beat them by submission, and then people are going to drink the Aoki Kool-Aid again.
But what wonderful submissions they'll be. And then he'll start crying and flipping everyone off because he gets so angry when he wins.
You know what Shinya Aoki is? He's like a Japanese Diaz brother who isn't as good at stand-up, and I don't like. That's why Aoki is.
We got to get that description all around the web. A Diaz brother that Michael Sanchez doesn't like and can't punch. People will ask, who's Michael Sanchez? I'll say, it doesn't matter. That's just accept it.
This is the guy that said that. He's the guy that said that.
I mean, I'm probably of us four, I'm the biggest Aoki fan. I'm the one who kind of... But he is what he is. You know, I admit he's a one-trick pony, and Gilbert Melendez basically put, you know, he answered, like, he solved the puzzle months ago, and his opponents since just haven't been applying it. The dude doesn't like getting hit, you know. Just once you hit him at all in the face, he'll pretty much back down. And, you know, you respect his game so much you don't want to go with him, but if you just keep punching him, you saw he put no effort towards fighting back. He had no will to keep trying. Like, you say the towel came flying in or something.
The towel came flying in after one punch. Seriously, that was the sad part. It was like he told his guys, look, if it looks like I might, you know, have difficulty chewing later, I want you to throw that towel in. It's like one punch.
Shinya might have a hot date later, you know? Certain things are more important.
In Cleveland?
It's possible. Maybe he likes heavy set Americans. It's possible.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been, I don't know. I mean, I didn't think he was going to come back from that anyway. It just kind of like... It kind of sucked. It really didn't, you know.
Yeah, well,
I thought it was going to be a good fight. I texted, you know, Sanchez. I was like, this is going to be really boring. There's no way this is going to be a good fight.
Well, I don't like is when I'm lied to, though. You know, months leading up to the fight, Aoki was saying he had been extensively working on his Muay Thai.
He could have been. You don't know. Maybe he was.
Maybe what he considers extensively working on his Muay Thai is that he watched, you know, Kickboxer a lot.
That might work. I don't know why we're poo-pooing watching Kickboxer.
Hey, maybe he'll take a Tung Po's technique down.
We've seen this story again. Whenever a submission expert works extensively on their striking, what happens is they just become bad at everything.
Well, I mean, you saw Aoki try some.
Yeah, I mean, we saw him try an elbow that, you know, didn't work out very well.
You guys saw that. Like, he tried using new striking techniques.
We got some interesting technical difficulty right now because I saw words coming from Mark without his mouth moving. That was weird. Can I hear anybody
what's going
now?
On? I don't know what was said now either. I don't want to repeat anything.
It's some amazing radio having some technical difficulties.
All right. Can everybody hear everybody?
Yep.
Yes, we can.
All right. Let's assume that didn't happen. Back to the myth of Shinya Aoki.
What myth? He is what he is.
Wait, the myth that he's a top five lightweight.
Well, I think
I didn't say five. I said seven.
I'm not saying it's the myth you came up with, man. Stop taking everything so personal. Are you his brother? Is it Uncle Shinya? What's going on with you?
It's possible.
All right. Are we done with Aoki, or anybody else got anything to say about this guy?
I am completely done with Aoki from now until the end of his career.
I'm going to assume everything was said when we had technical difficulties.
Yeah, for people who are wondering, I mean, the time you didn't hear us was when was really the more brilliant shit came out.
Yeah, so it's we really broke it down in depth.
All right. Let's get to it. UFC 145. Jones versus Evans. You know, yeah.
That's old news, Bobby. That was yesterday's, dog.
Yeah, well,
don't play it up like it's important. That shit's over.
All right, so let's just start with the main event. I honestly didn't. I really am surprised it went to decision with Jones winning. I thought Jones was going to finish him. But apparently, Lavender Gooms is a goddamn psychic. So, yeah.
You know, it's not. You know, it's. People were pretty much writing off Jones off. It's, you know, that he was going to get destroyed. But, you know, Jones? I gave a lot. No, I mean, that Jones is going to destroy Evans.
All right.
You know, I gave a lot to, you know, pride when it came to you know, Rashad Evans going into the fight. Not so much with the familiarity, because I really didn't see that coming into play. And I just thought he wasn't going to allow himself to get finished by Jones at the very least. And that was a bang-up game plan on his part, because after about the second round, he just wasn't really trying from the looks of it.
I think those elbows messed him up. The grab his hand and elbow him in the face thing. I don't think Rashad even talked about it. He wasn't really prepared for that.
As he called it, what he called it, those cute elbows?
At least it was sneaky.
Oh, sneaky. There we go.
I mean, I think you saw with Evans around after the third round. I don't want to say he was broken, but I think he was a little mentally beat, and it's kind of why you never really saw him go to the takedown after. I think he was comfortable to – he knew he was going to lose at that point, but better for him to lose a decision than to, you know, be put unconscious, to get knocked out. Because Evans never really turned it on. He never, you know, went to clinch against the fence. He never started throwing wildly. He never started shooting the takedown, like, with serious intent. I think he was just ready to – he accepted his fate a little bit after the third round.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, he didn't start poorly either. Two of the judges and most of us gave him the first round, and he landed a good shot that round. I don't know. I'm not really sure what his plan was. Him off.
Another thing that could be a big turning point, which I think finally puts the myth away, Rashad clocked Jones with two pretty clean overhand rights that did not faze Jones in the slightest. So I think everyone who wondered about Jones' chin, I don't think they have to wonder anymore.
Yeah, the man does not have a bad chin. It's clear. He got hit pretty square.
Yeah, so light heavyweights around the world. That one little part you guys are hoping was a chink in Jones's armor. Yeah, it's not there.
Yeah, fuck that. He hasn't been hit by an H bomb yet. No one knocked out Fedor either. All right. I'm just saying. Dan Henderson's got TNT and TRT in those fists, man. He's coming for him.
He works PR for UFC. Exactly. He's already hyping the next event for him.
But it's gonna be scary for people that have to fight Jones after this, because after Hendo, I really don't see anyone else in the light heavyweight division even being remotely a challenge for him.
They beat all them.
That's it. After Hendo, it's cleaned out.
Unless Phil Davis beats like the two people really impressively, I don't know who it's going to be.
Alex? Yeah. Guy, they're not going to have any of their top contenders to get him, so they'll probably have them fight.
Well, yeah, just by default, he'll be the top contender, but do you really think he has a shot against
Beach? No, of course not.
I think the problem with guys, everybody fights Jones, it's like the way everybody fights Anderson. They're, at this point, not worried at all. They don't focus on what they're doing themselves. They're just immediately worried about what, you know, Jones is doing to them. And, like, they spend the whole time avoiding Jones' stuff, which I mean, if you get hot hit by it, you're probably going to go out, but you're never going to mount any offense if you spend the whole time, you know, just waiting and trying to see what he's going to do. It's like when, like, back to the Anderson thing, like, the only person who really did anything to Anderson was Chael. And you could tell Chael didn't give a shit what Anderson was going to do. He just immediately got in his face and did what he was going to do, you know? You got to go with that kind of mentality. You might lose ultimately, but at least show up with your use your game plan. Your game plan cannot be, let's just, you know, let's see what this
That's a testament to John Jones, though, is that Jones outright dictates the pace. Jones breaks your will immediately, to
Anderson.
You know?
That's why I'm saying it's like Anderson. This is not a negative on Jones. I'm saying this is how everybody else, they can't just look at him like, you're not going to get anywhere treating him like this. You're not going to have no chance of winning.
Well, you see that a lot with guys that have a lot of different techniques than what other guys use. Like, you see Anderson, people act that way. Jones, they act that way. Machida, they act that way because they have such different techniques. You know, you don't get a lot of guys at those side kicks and spinning elbows and stuff like that. So they have to be more wary about stuff, and it makes them tentative. And then while they're worrying about, like, oh, if I throw a jab, he might do a spinning this or that or the other guy's starting his game plan already. So, I mean, Bobby's right. They don't dictate the fight at all. And they're trying to counter, and it hasn't worked to anyone so far, and it probably never will.
It's like they've lost before the fight has even, like, gone anywhere. Like, they've already, like, accepted that I'm just going to stop doing what he's doing. And while you're doing that, you're never doing what your intent was the whole time. You know, you practiced. I'm sure you had an offensive strategy. It just didn't happen.
I'm sure they're waiting for him to make a mistake because he does such crazy things. Like, sometime he'll do a spinning elbow and I'll be able to get out of the way and I'll be able to counter, and they're waiting for those moments and those chances, and they don't come very often. We saw with Jones a few times that Rashad actually capitalized on him and threw a big overhand right. Now, I mean, none of them land super clean, but they hit him and they didn't knock him down, so I think that mentally took him out of the game too. At that point where he's hit him a few times really hard and Jones hasn't responded with getting dazed or, you know, having his footing off even the slightest, That kind of dictates more because he knew he wasn't getting the takedown. But now the striking's not working. It's like, well, I don't know. I got to wait for a miracle, and it never came. So
it's like he abandoned the takedown, though, before he even really gave a good shot at. You know, he really put a good shot out. It's like you can't abandon what you're good at just because the other guy's also good at it. This is how you got to the dance. Don't just assume it's going to fail. Give it a shot.
Jones couldn't get in range the whole fight, you know. Not Jones, Rashad, sorry. I mean, every time Rashad tried to get in, you know, Jones is putting his hands out and he's grabbing his hands, and the whole time he couldn't get in to punch, let alone shoot for a takedown. And Jones is way too good to just take a shot from, you know, 3 feet out. He's going to sprawl on you. So, I mean, there's no point. And then you saw the one time Jones kind of did shoot on him. Rashad shot on him. Jones got him in like a quick little guillotine. I'm sure after that he's like, well, fuck that. I got to wait for the overhand right again because nothing's working.
It would have been really funny for people to watch the fight. The last, like, 10 seconds of the fight, Jones decided to pull guard for some reason. I think he was going flying triangle or something. I don't know, because that's what he did to Rampage. But it didn't work. And that was, like, the most success Rashad had since the first round, was, like, landing one or two punches on the ground. That would have been hilarious if he lost.
I don't think he went for anything. If you recall them saying, Winklejohn, for the whole, like, last round, was just yelling at Jones, have fun. I really think that's what it was. I think it was just Jones, because he did it with a smile on his face when you saw, if you go back and look at it. He was just dicking around saying, I could do whatever the fuck I feel like in this cage. That's it. If I want to pull guard for no goddamn reason, sure.
When Rogan asked him about it, he said, well, he didn't want to get with any haymakers. I'm like, well, I don't know, jumping at him might not be the best idea, but...
I mean, it almost seems like it did the opposite, Stefan, like, where he thinks he could do whatever the fuck he wants. He did whatever he wanted, and it totally backfired. Like, the last 10 seconds, like, he was pounding on him pretty good. And it was like, well, shit, maybe his bottom game's not that good.
It's like, if he did it, like, at the minute left, it would have been much more entertaining.
He did it with 10 seconds, so, I mean, it was a safe bet. It wasn't like, I could do it. I'm going to just sit down on my back. You can't do shit, because he went down. I was like, oh, well, that's immediately a bad idea.
I think Jones did more of that, I think, to just kind of give the finger to Rashad. Like, you know, I can do whatever I want in this ring right now, and you are not going to win.
I know, but it seems like it backfired.
He was just throwing a bone to Rashad. All right, Rashad, I've been beating you up for the whole fight. Here, I'll give you 10 seconds of glory. Do some
overall, that is takedown stats.
It wasn't a great fight overall. I mean, those elbows are really cool, the grab-the-hand elbow thing Jones was doing, but
I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Steph.
I enjoyed the fight a lot, actually. I enjoyed it, even though it wasn't super action-packed, even though it didn't have a great finish. I've been so fascinated with watching John Jones as a fighter his whole career, I like watching all his evolutions as a fighter. I like seeing how he figures out how to use his range, how he figures out to use his techniques. Like that, just that reaching to inside elbow, that move just seemed, it seems like such a slight move, but he got devastating with it. He severely rocked Rashad a couple times with it. And if that's just going to become a staple of his game, that was worth watching the fight to me.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it was terrible. I just didn't think it was that. I mean, I thought it was going to be better. I really thought it was going to be either Jones is going to finish him doing something nutty or Rashad might get a lucky punch or something. I expected a little bit more. And also for a card that had no depth, I'm sure the UFC thought so too.
Well, what I enjoyed about that fight, I think I have to agree with Steph. It's just seeing how Jones finds a kind of different game plan with each new opponent to beat him. Like that elbow thing was a new facet that he added to his arsenal that we've never seen before. That when he first started doing it, I remember everyone at the house where I was watching it was saying, "What the hell is he doing?" And his arms are so long, whereas with someone else, if they try to do that little short elbow thing, they're gonna catch nothing but air. But you know, John Jones with his orangutan arms, it's a perfect weapon for him in that situation. It keeps Rashad at bay and you know, it gives him some sweet chin music.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle with you guys. I kind of sat with Bobby because I do think it was kind of in the later rounds. It got by the second round, you could tell. I mean, I told Bobby and Steph when we were watching the fight, like you can tell this is a fight that's going to go to the decision. I mean, the second round was harder because he did hurt him a little bit with the elbows. But after that round, you're like, I just see him kind of riding this out. It doesn't look like Rashad had anything left. But at the same time, it was interesting to see him develop that elbow. And it's a perfect weapon for him because you can tell he still doesn't know how to use his punches. I mean, still his gaping hole in this game is he's still not using his punches well. And you can tell that, I mean, there was sometimes he jabbed in the fight. They were like really good jabs. Like, oh, he can jab. Like he should be doing that all the time. One. And it seems like he knows how to do it. I don't know why he's not, you know, instinctively using the jab more often. We can tell that left hooks aren't in his repertoire yet. His arms are too long, and his punches, I guess, are too wide to be effective. So the short left hook elbow is a perfect weapon. And, I mean, it seemed like he got a few of them early in the fight, and then he noticed that he could do it without being in the clinch. He could just be staying with the guy and hit him there. So, I mean, that was interesting. But overall, the fight was – it wasn't – your other John Jones fights are also so spectacular, and he finishes them all by choking them unconscious or knocking them to oblivion, that when he has a mediocre fight, it seems worse than it would be. It wasn't like an Anderson and Maya fight or anything,
Patrick. I just expected a little bit more.
You expected a little bit more flair, but you didn't, you know, but it was a good fight. He won, he needed a win, and he got it, so it was good.
All right, before we move on to the next fight, we're going to chime in with some, I got some breaking news. That's why you people listen to It's Amazing Radio. The breaking news happens on Sundays. We're going to talk about this later, how Alistair Overeem is not getting a title fight, and Frank Mir is fighting Junior Dos Santos now. And Cain Velasquez was without an opponent. And Stefan's worst fears. And orthopedic surgeon in San Jose's greatest, you know, joy is happening, because Cain Velasquez is going to fight Bigfoot Silva, and he's going to break his hand on Bigfoot Silva's big head. So it's time for hand surgery.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, just you can beat Bigfoot. You're just going to break your hand doing it. It's just he's got that extra adamantium like layer around his skull. He can still get knocked out. The brain still gets rocked, but it just hurts your hand.
We got a month to talk about this fight, but I think Cain Velasquez is going to kill him. Honestly, I think he's going to absolutely smoke him, but
I think it'll look very similar to how Cormier beat him.
Yeah, and I think Cain's better than Cormier.
Who really taught Cormier how to do stand-up at the heavyweight? Kind of Cain.
So this leaves Roy Nelson without an opponent. All right, let's take some. Let's guess here. Who's got Matt Mitrione? Who's got Travis Brown?
I'll take Mihad.
I'm gonna go Travis Brown. Do you other two gentlemen anything?
They have no thoughts on it.
Oh. No.
Nothing at all?
Bird, I don't know why he hasn't fought yet. If he's in good health, then he should fight him.
All right, technical difficulties all over the place. Kid Presentable, you still there?
I'm good. I'm solid. I was just sad. We skipped over right to heavyweights without me getting to say that John Jones is the greatest light heavyweight of all time.
Well, you know, we can't blow him every time we talk about him, Steph.
Yeah. I can. I told you, I've been the conductor of this hype train.
Stefan, you've got a finite amount of saliva.
I'm cashing in.
All right. Stefan, you only have so many deep pads and lotion for those knees, man.
All right,
I got a good paying job. Keep buying more. Keep the supply coming.
Let's go back
coming.
To the card. DJ Mark, you back? DJ Mark?
Well, he'll join us when he can join
us. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can hear you guys now.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you guys now. Can you not hear me?
Yeah, we got you. Got you. In the co-main event, Rory McDonald versus Chae Mills.
Can we say about Chae Mills that he became a new, just a favorite, not necessarily as a fighter, just that he's one, beautiful Chae Mills, and two, he comes out to some reggae music.
Yeah. He was getting the best of the stand-up for like a minute and a half, and then Rory said, fuck this, and he took him down and beat the fuck out of him, basically, for the rest of that first round, and then a couple minutes.
The fact that he's an English striker with no takedown defense came into play.
Yeah.
Mm. Very shocking. Yeah. But McDonald, Rory, he got rocked for a little bit, but then he took him down so quickly and so easily that...
Yeah. It may as well have been Paul Daly.
I don't know if it was just a mixture of Rory's that good of a wrestler or, you know, well, he was fighting a Brit.
Option two. That's what I'm taking.
No, but Rory's ground and pound is vicious. He throws to kill you with his ground and pound. It's like Chae Mills slapped his mom before the fight. Rory was coming to kill.
I was so impressed with how patient he was. He got on top of him. He's like, I'm in no hurry. I got mount. I'm going to go to the back now. Oh, you roll a little bit? I'm going to take mount again. I'm going to punch you about 9 times in between each of these moments. Oh, okay. You're going to let me punch you some more? All right, well, we're done fighting. Like, that was Rory's attitude. It was like a serial killer. He's just like, oh, I got to do this now. And then this.
If he keeps going at this pace, I don't see how he doesn't fight for the title in a year and a half or 2 years. Or he has to move up.
They're going to give him probably a bigger step this time, his next opponent. I'm not sure who's free, though, because everybody's pretty booked.
If you want to see him where he's at, I know he has a book fight, but... I don't know. Ellenberger seems like it'd be a good match to me.
I think Ellenberger's fighting for the number one contendership against Campman.
I think Ellenberger is the number one contendership.
Well, he better not lose to Campman then. What's Diego Sanchez doing?
It can't be his third if Campman gets it. I don't know. Campman has not looked very impressive even in his wins lately.
Well, considering he was losing two rounds and, you know, almost all of the third round against his last opponent.
How the mighty have fallen with Thiago Alves.
Yeah. He can fight Thiago Alves.
Nah, that's pointless. Rory's coming off a series of wins. Thiago's coming off of a series of losses.
All right, he can fight. Yeah,
Cause Hendricks winner.
I think the Cause Hendricks winner. Yeah, I mean, if he's on the trajectory not to fight for a title for another year or a half, he might just keep fighting lower-level guys, though.
Yeah, I don't think they have to rush him. I mean, he's not.
Welterweight's not thin.
You know? Yeah, they don't need to put him against the top five guys yet, because he's young, and he even expressed that he's still young and he still needs a lot more fights and stuff. So
you can fight Diego Sanchez.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be in such a rush for new contenders that they're going to rush him into something that he's not going to be ready for. So
fight Diego.
Now, do you think he said that because he doesn't want to have to fight GSP, or do you think he honestly feels that he's going to need 3 or 4 years to contend for the title?
Probably both.
I think it was a political move. Because think of it this way.
If
Condit beats GSP, you think Rory's not going to want that shot against Condit? In his mind, he beat him for 98% of that fight. You know? If Condit was the champion, Rory would want that. Rory would not be saying, I need time. If it was Condit who was the champion, Rory would know that he was ready.
He's like Jake Ellenberger. Isn't Condit? Did Condit lose to Jake Ellenberger or beat him? I don't remember. It was so close.
I thought he beat
him, but I believe it was a close split decision.
And Ellenberger dropped him in the first. All right. Next fight was Brendan Schaub versus Ben Rothwell.
Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. I heard Schaub is talking about going to 205. He's got a lot of fat. I don't know how he's going to do that. He's a pretty big boy.
He's got a bit. He's got a bit of fat, though. He's got a bit of baby fat still on him.
He's 240? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe he can do it.
Well, I mean, he weighed in at 230, and, you know, he looks like he's got a little love handles he can lose.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at a certain point, do we start questioning his chin because he's getting knocked out a lot, or is it the fact that he's getting knocked out by guys who know how to hit hard? So I don't know.
They hit hard, but it's big guys too. But I mean, you look at the shot Rothwell caught him with. It was a left hook. It wasn't planted. It wasn't a full extension. It was just kind of like Rothwell pawing out there because he was being punched in the face. It really doesn't seem like, if you look at the specific punch that put him out, that punch doesn't put most guys out.
I disagree. It's not always that a punch needs to be thrown perfectly. As much as it needs to land perfectly, and that punch landed right on his chin. Like,
he was also off balance.
He was, but all you gotta do is look at Schaub's head when he got hit, and he hit his jaw, he hit his chin. The chin snaps the neck, and it snaps the head. And that brain hits the skull, and then you go unconscious. That's just how people go unconscious: is your brain hits your skull, and your body goes, "Shit, I'm hurt," and you black out. And that's exactly what happened. Like, he hit him right in the button. It wasn't a good punch. Like, I'm not gonna even argue that because he was, like Stefan said, he was just swinging, countering, but it hit him perfectly. And when you weigh, what did Rothwell? He was like 260 something, right?
Yeah, and yeah. It wasn't a lot of fat. Rory,
yeah, man, yeah, he looked good. But it was just, I think it was placement and weight a lot more than technique, because I don't think technique had a much to do with that knockdown. Because I was just him throwing a fist, but it landed.
I'll give you that. Because yeah, I agree with you. Especially with heavyweights, there's just more power to it, and power can make up for missing technique. But it's this thing about the questionable chin question. You know, the more you get knocked out, the easier it becomes for you to get knocked out. Your body just reacts that way. And basically, Brendan Schaub, if you look at his career in the UFC, he's been trying to rival Stefan Struve for who's going to be the youngest 20-something-year-old to get put out so many times. So just for his health, just for the sake of his like own health and longevity, 205 is not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, no, he goes unconscious. Like, when he gets hit good, like, he flatlines. Like,
these aren't TKOs. Was, they're KOs.
Yeah, they're not, like...
He's out.
Nelson flatlined him, and then... Who is the other guy that
Big
did
Nog.
Nog. Big Nog, Nog flatlined him, and then Rothwell. And those aren't guys that you want to have on the list of guys that completely knocked you unconscious. I mean, Roy's fine, but the other two are kind of like, eh, they don't, you know, smoke guys like that often, so it's kind of weird. But I agree, his chin's real suspect. Real suspect.
Then we had... an upset, a minor upset. Kid Presentable picked it. Michael McDonald killed Miguel Torres. I can't believe it. I was very surprised about how that went down.
Yeah, if you want to talk about guys that have questionable chins, I think you have to put Miguel Torres on there. Because I think Bulls kind of broke him, because that was a really bad knockout. And this was another really bad knockout where he's completely unconscious. And the thing about those ones were there was follow-up punches, and he didn't wake up on any of those punches. Like, they were just unconscious, still getting smashed punches. So I think that button's been pressed, and it's going to be a lot difficult for him to win fights now and contend with that. Because if he gets hit there again, he'll probably go out.
You think two knockouts is it for him? Like, it's already the chin's
gone?
They're
just bad. They're just bad knockouts.
That's true.
But that's my question. We'll see. Maybe if he starts getting cracked again, he's not going out. We'll see, but I think the Bulls fight wasn't that in the first round too. It was early, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and this one's early, so it's not like he was devastated. He was on limp legs and then he got knocked out.
There's not a lot of power in that weight class, in general. Not a lot of power. I mean, McDonald's got power and Bulls got some power. Uriah doesn't KO people. Uriah pound, you know, we'll get a TKO every now and then.
Yeah, I still think they need to make that fight, but I don't know how it's gonna happen now.
You're like Bulls or Uriah?
Uriah and. Torres.
Yeah, can we see that?
Yeah.
If he'd won this fight, it would have been helpful.
But with Torres, I don't know if you can question his chin yet, because, yeah, he got knocked out pretty viciously this time, but the Bulls fight didn't happen. It's not like it just happened. The Bulls fight was about six fights ago. I mean, yeah, they were both really bad knockouts, but, you know, I think they're far enough in between each other that you just got to – I think you got to tip your cap to Bowles and McDonald rather than say that Torres is done, because I still love Miguel Torres. He won me money, so.
Yeah, I love Miguel Torres too, bud.
I'm not sure it's Torres's chin yet, but the one thing for certain, since that Bowles loss, he's not the fighter that he used to be.
He used to be wild.
Whatever it is, it's just he was more wild. He was more aggressive. I know he's trying to be more tactical and tentative, but I don't know. I think he's thinking too much in the cage. There's guys he definitely he should have simply outclassed that he let hang around with him, and then there's guys who have beaten him now because, you know, I don't know if it's he honored them too much, but he just didn't have the assertiveness that he needs to win a fight.
In all fairness to him, Michael McDonald did this to somebody else in November.
But there's a big difference between Alex Soto and Miguel Torres.
Hey, Alex Soto might not have no skills, but he might have a good chin for all we know. I'm just saying. This isn't the first guy to get murked by McDonald. I'm looking at his record.
Let's give it up for Modesto, yeah. California.
NorCal represent, people.
Yeah.
I'm not giving them Bay Area credit.
That's completely what I picked him based on is, he's a Northern California kid. How am I going to go against that? Because let's be honest. One, he doesn't have, no disrespect to them, but quote-unquote a real camp. You know, he still trains in Modesto. He never joined a high-profile camp. It's kind of like he's the big fish in the small pond there now. But
it's
you
time
know
to get
what?
A real camp, by the way.
I don't know. It's working for him. The dude.
I don't know. I think it's time. Go join AKA. It's not that far.
Well, you know, what was AKA until someone big won there, you know? I'm sure at one point they're like, why are you at AKA? Go to Lion's Den. What, are you fucking retarded?
Didn't they get Frank? Didn't they get Frank Shamrock before it was called AKA?
I think Frank didn't like Lion's Den that much.
Well, there you go. So we had to get some good guy there.
I know, but every camp starts somewhere. So unless he gets to the point where he's just getting outclassed by everyone, he's like, I don't have anyone to spar with. I'm sparring with a bunch of idiots in Modesto. Then it's like, well, you have to move. But he still looks good, so I don't think he has to uproot his life just yet.
Not yet. Hey, San Jose is not that far from Modesto. Just throwing that out there.
Bob, San Jose has got Santana Road. There's going to be so many vices. The kid just wants his sweets. No alcohol. You
know, hey, Stockton and Modesto are pretty close, too. He can go join Cesar Gracie.
No, there's going to be bad influences on him. You can hang out with Jake Shields and Gilbert Melendez. They like to party, man.
Yeah, he doesn't even drink.
Look, if McDonald ever want to have sex with three Asian girls at once, that's the camp to go to. They'll teach him.
Yeah, Jake Shields could take him under his wing.
I'm sorry, but I don't think you can roll with Jake Shields and not take some shot from him or something. I'm pretty sure he has some hardcore rules. He's like, look, dude, you got to get drunk with me. That's going to get side bitches for just hanging out and eating cake and shit. You can't get milkshakes at the bar.
We promise you one day there's going to be an article on our website detailing everything we talk about with Jake Shields. Kid presentable ready to get one day.
One day. I just need to find that perfect timing. Japan was the perfect timing, but I got a little lazy, I'll be honest.
All right. On the main card, what else we got? We got Hominick versus Yake.
It's one of the biggest upsets in recent MMA.
Yeah. People need to give some credit to this, because Mark Hominick's better than Eddie Yagan at everything. Much better. And Yagan beat him. That was really impressive to me.
Is he better at being a short, stocky, probably chain smoker Filipino? I think not.
I think if Hominick really tried, he could do it.
What is that music? It sounds so familiar. I know it's from like 80, like an 8-bit game or something. But
hey,
Mike, what is that? We know it's coming from
you. Are you playing Mega Man?
I apologize. That is my ringtone.
Is it Mega Man?
What is it, though?
Yeah, it's Mega Man, Airman stage.
Oh, recognize people. Okay. I knew
recognize,
Mega Man.
You live with the motherfucker for 4 years. I'm sure he still had the same shit.
All right, yeah. And Hominick got his face messed up again. Big hematoma.
Yeah, that was a good fight. I was mad that they didn't – did they not – they didn't win any bonuses.
No, they got it. They got it.
That was something. Okay.
That was some sponsor thing. That was like the Muscle Farm fight of the night. No one gives a shit about Muscle Farm. They sponsor Rashad. That's why it was the fight of the night.
Okay.
Dana said this was fight of the night, and the knockout of the night was Rothwell, but he said he would take care of McDonald too, which means he got a big check too.
Like take care of him?
Yeah, he's dead. And then sub of the night was the only sub of the night.
I'm pretty sure Dana probably took McDonald to Magic City.
No. He probably gave him a sundae and said, "There you go, son. So the, eat up.
Here, son. This is what's called a wobble."
Took on the pink berry. Yeah. And then Bocek, hey,
Alessio. McDonald, get the waffle cone this time. It's on me. Don't worry.
A couple other notable things. Bocek and Alessio. Pretty uneventful. Travis Brown, Chad Griggs. If anybody really thought Chad Griggs knew how to do anything, well, this was the fight for you to get your heart broken.
If you thought size didn't matter in MMA, size and skill, because Chad Griggs had his lungs on both.
He was just flopping around when he was in an arm triangle choke.
Oh, that was great. That was the best sell of the night.
That was a pro wrestling style tap out.
And then he tapped out on the mat.
That was Vince McMahon just got the Stone Cold Stunner, and now I'm having a seizure on the mat.
He also tapped out like he was tapping out to the figure four, just slamming the mat. Just pow, pow, pow.
Yeah, it was just those flops with the legs. Like, he wasn't pushing. He wasn't, like, bucking. It was like one leg would go up and fall down. The other leg would go up and fall down. I was like, what are you doing?
His defense to the arm triangle choke would be my defense to the arm triangle choke. Yeah. Just panic. Yeah.
The only thing sadder would if he had, like, a thumbs up, and as he went unconscious and slowly went down, he just...
The referee raised his arm three times. Yeah. And the third time, he's just like arms, raising it up, like, I'm ready. I'm holding up.
But those didn't happen. Then, he just flopped around like a fish.
Let's talk about Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who the great Jason Helm wrote an article for us about his time training with Stephen Thompson when they were kids. And Stephen Thompson knows stand up, but he's clearly got to work on his ground game.
Yeah. He has worked takedown defense than any British fighter I've ever made fun of.
He's got some Musasi level takedown defense.
At one point, without any trips or clinch work, Matt Brown just kicked his legs and he fell down.
He kicked his legs out.
I'm telling you, he's got some Musasi level takedown defense.
Yeah, that was depressing. There was one takedown that Matt Brown did that it was like he was literally 6 feet away, and it was the laziest takedown attempt I ever saw, and he got him onto the ground.
They were just like, it was basically Matt Brown was really tired from trying to lay and pray, which he's not really used to. And Stephen Thompson was really tired from blocking takedowns or trying to get off his back more, which he clearly wasn't used to.
You know, when he wasn't tired, he actually impressed me with his ability to get up. He knew how to get the underhook. He knew how to wall walk. You know, he had a good idea of how to actually get back up. He just had no idea how to stop from getting there in the first place.
And there's always said grappling cardio is a lot different than regular cardio. So
and it really seemed that, you know, by the middle of the second round, both Thompson and Matt Brown were just, you know, completely exhausted. But Matt Brown seemed to be able to work through it while Thompson just, you know, his punches just lost all their crispness and technique to them.
Yeah, Matt Brown makes it into UFC just basically on being tough. He's not particularly good at – he's not that good at anything, really. He's just – he knows a little bit of everything, and he's tough and hard to finish.
I think he did a couple things in that fight that really kind of broke Thompson down. You could tell Thompson was trying this left high kick a lot, and Matt just completely – not only did he stop the kicks, it looked like it threw Thompson off balance, and it looked like it threw energy out because you could tell he throws them hard, and then he's blocking before they even got close to getting, like, finished, or he's blocking them really early. So I think when Thompson started realizing that his high kicks to the head aren't going to be effective because this guy's blocking, because the left high kick is because Matt Brown's right-handed, that's like the sweet kick to get to the head. And once he figured out that avenue is not going to work and he's not going to be able to punish this guy enough to make him quick because he's just too tough, like you guys mentioned, the avenues to win got even less. And then when he starts getting taken down, he's like, I can't stop this. You can tell the fight. Not only physically was he exhausted, but mentally it was just like the avenues of winning are just getting slimmer and slimmer. That's my analysis.
Yeah. It was not a good night for karate because in addition to that fight, Anthony Njokuani kicked the
beat
crap
McDessie,
out of
him. Kicked the crap out of that shit was a snoozer. That was a stand-up snoozer.
Karate didn't work. I'm sticking with my theory.
Is Anthony
also, that was Taekwondo, not karate.
I'm sorry.
Boom, you racist motherfucker.
Fine, Muay Thai superior to all, is what I'm saying.
And also note the kicking lesson that Joe Rogan gave during that fight. Did you guys catch that? It was so in-depth, I was impressed.
I caught a little bit of it.
Joe Rogan knows his
sidekicks. Yeah, he knows his sidekicks.
Yeah.
As I learned yesterday, if the knee is below the foot, you get a lot more power, apparently.
You're working against gravity.
So that's it. I mean, other thing worth mentioning, our boy Marcus Brimage had a boring fight with Moxco Blanco, which I don't think anybody saw coming. And only worthwhile part was the end when there were a bunch of cartwheels. But we'll write a little story.
That was crazy. Is there gifts of that yet?
Because there's a video. We'll have an article for you later this week with the video embedded. It'll be magical. Maybe Marcus himself will take a look at it.
You know, it wasn't the most exciting, but props to our boy Marcus Brimage, friend to It's Amazing. Because, frankly, he was expected to get starched. Not only was he not expected to win, he was expected to lose spectacularly. So the fact that he did pull out a decision, regardless of whatever method it was, you know, hats off to him for that.
He was the one going forward the whole fight. I don't know what Maximo Blanco was trying to do.
Well, not. I mean, I don't want to shit on Marcus or anything, but he wasn't really going forward the whole fight because Maximo took the center of the octagon, but he never pressed the fight. That was
second round. That was only round that.
I think it was almost every round that he held the center, but he didn't do anything. And I think that threw Marcus off because Maxco is usually a really aggressive guy. And especially moving down a weight class when he's going to be bigger, you think like, oh, he's going to be even more aggressive. But he wasn't at all. And I think that threw Marcus off. And he did everything he needed to do to win. And I think the fight really became more boring because Maximo didn't seem like he was all that interested in engaging him that much. So, but he got the W. And am I right or wrong? Did he do more backflips? I don't remember the count. I caught it halfway. Know.
We'll break it down for you. It'll be a real in-depth article, we promise.
Yeah, let's score each backflip with landings, and let's get this, because that seems the most important thing in the actual fight.
Exactly.
We'll have the You Got Served edition of UFC 145.
Yeah, and last thing worth mentioning probably on this card, Mac Danzig beat Efren Escudero after possibly breaking his ankle in the first round. If nothing else, messing it up, so props to him.
And that's all that deserves to be said about that fight.
Yeah. Before we go, there's a little bits of news worth throwing out there. Dana White hasn't really had a lot of talks to the press recently, and Ariel hasn't talked to him, so it's been hard to get some news out. But last night he was talking at the press conference. He was talking about how BJ Penn told him he does want to fight again, and all the stuff about BJ not wanting to fight again isn't true, and that he's talking to BJ about him getting a fight again. I hope he comes back. He's one of my favorite lightweights, so hopefully
he comes back at lightweight or welterweight.
I don't know. I hope it's lightweight. He's so good at lightweight.
Welterweight didn't work out too well for him.
I don't think you can talk. Well, I mean, if BJ really wants to fight, maybe he'll do lightweight. But I think someone who's really on the wall, I don't see him getting enough like amp to be like, yeah, I'm gonna make the cut, because the 155 cut for him is like a life altering thing. Like, he has to move away from Hawaii. He has to eat right and work out really hard every day, whereas welterweight, he could kind of...
Well, welterweight, he shows up at 168 in jeans. I don't know how much he has to really cut for 155.
You've seen the prime times where at 155, he looks like a different man. That's why you like him, because he fights so much better at 155.
BJ with abs is like the best fighter in the world, basically.
Yeah, because he has to work out, but I just don't... I mean, obviously, we all hope he goes 155, but I kind of see him sticking out welterweight and being like, I want to fight again, but I don't want to take it that seriously. Give me Matt Hughes. He's going to ask for Hughes again.
I just hope he comes back. And because it's nice to have guys like that around who are at least finishers. In this day and age where finishers are getting, you know, less and less, you know, I don't know. It's more and more rare. Let's go with that. And something I told Mark last night, which Dana White's saying the same thing, that they're going for Eddie Alvarez and Hector Lombard.
Booyah, Hector.
So he's going to cut the balls off that organization.
Show Eddie the money.
That's the balls right there, guys. One in the left and the right, Hector Lombard and Eddie Alvarez. The company has no balls when he takes those two guys.
They don't need Eddie anymore. They got Chandler.
Yeah, okay.
They'll get him a nice hot blonde wife. She'll go to all the fights. They'll just start calling him Eddie Alvarez. They'll never know the difference.
When Dana White starts talking publicly about going after guys, it either means they're as good as gone, or the other company has to spend so much money, they're going to bleed badly.
Usually when they mention the name, it's like, because we're going to pay him a shit ton of money.
Yeah. He says, you know, he just says, I like Eddie and I like Hector. We're going to try to, you know, we're going to see what happens, which means, you know, they're on the plane right now. You know, they're going to send back.
Bellator still has Ben Askren, most exciting fighter alive.
One of two people banned. Is there anybody we need to add to the ban list?
You banned him. I'll talk to him.
Okay. That's on your own time. Hope you become friends.
I'd love to add Aoki to the ban list.
Who's on the ban list?
I'll talk to Aoki too. We all have personal ban lists, is what it is. It's not a group thing. It's just one of us on each thing agrees to never want to have anything to do with that.
Yeah, no one wants to ban Aoki.
Apparently, it's not Nippo forever, huh? With Aoki.
I'm fine with Aoki. I like Aoki. I'll get me a pair of Aoki pants tomorrow. I would wear them on the next podcast if I had those.
I think it's my pajama pants.
One man name, and that is Carlos Condit. Go to hell, Carlos.
It's Kneebone, and so he gets his ass, like he gets his back on the ground, then they throw him the towel.
What are you talking about? That dude moved up to number 5. You see the heart he displayed last night?
Yeah, he took that touch like a champion.
You don't want none of that. You don't want none of that.
He's just lucky he didn't tap the strikes.
He didn't, though. It's pretty good.
Hey, that's a moral victory right there.
I think that's the thing he has with his corner. Is like, look, when I start getting hit with strikes, I don't want to tap out, but you throw that goddamn towel as soon as you can.
Yeah. All right. And I think there's no card next week. Unless it's, what is it? Does Bellator got anything?
I think Bellator is
Friday every week. Friday.
What is it?
Yeah, isn't that Chandler in Gono? Is that next week? Let me check.
Is that really the main event?
It's a good main event to me. Have you seen? Yeah, it is the main event. Have you seen Akiono Gono's entrance, Bobby?
In America? Because it's not going to be as good.
I know. He did it in UFC. Do you remember it? I don't think we do.
This is when he fought Hughes?
He didn't fight Hughes, I don't think. He fought Fitch. He fought the Barney Tatt. I can't remember his name. Okay, he wears an afro. He has these guys. He has this awesome song. He does this little dance.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Okay, hopefully he does that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got that. We got Ben Saunders fighting Brian Baker. And Carl Amasal versus David Rickles. So, yeah. No UFC till May 5th. Next week's episode is going to be coming to you Thursday if you listen to it live. And if you're getting it on iTunes, you'll see it Friday morning or Thursday night, depending on how soon I find a new provider for our hosting. And, I see no one took the time to visit us. We put an invitation out for people to visit us at the Childish Gambino concert. To visit and make it an It's an Amazing event. No one came and visited. What was going on, people?
Weren't you guys in the nosebleeds of the nosebleeds, though?
You know, it wasn't that big of an arena. It was cool.
Well, I didn't know we were having a meetup, Bobby. So if I don't even know about it, how can the fans know about it?
Well, some people like to show up for the podcast.
Was it last week you guys said something? Oh, well, I wasn't on that one, so fuck you. I'm a fan of the shows I'm on, so.
You know what? We'll have another It's an Amazing event. On Friday, May 4th, at the Black Keys concert in Oakland. Next week, we'll have the section number, so you can come by and say hi to us.
Yeah, make sure to avoid.
We're having an It's an Amazing weekend next weekend in Tahoe, if you want to join us up there.
That's true, at the Harrah's in Tahoe.
You will be at the blackjack table with Esther.
Yeah, winning our money. And then we'll lose everywhere else. It's kind of sad.
Yep, that's how it works.
Basically, she wins the money for you. She's like, okay, now bet. Wait. Now I'm going to flip this card. Now you win.
If you guys only win with Esther, why do you go anyplace else?
That's a good question,
because it's rotating.
Man.
It's a rotating shift. She disappears. We can't follow her at all times.
Yeah. I think Mike's making the argument that why do we gamble anywhere else at all?
Then what you need to do is that when Esther's there, you gamble to your heart's content. As soon as she leaves, you go get a burger.
That's true. That's,
I'm going to try that out this time.
I don't even know what casino she was in.
Harvey's.
No, Harrah's. There's only like 3 of them.
I thought she's in Harvey's.
See? We don't even know.
You bring your iPad or tablet when she leaves. You know, you play some Temple Run or something, and you wait until she comes back.
This is true, because I remember one particular trip where Bobby and Mark stayed on, and this old dude with silver hair from Texas showed up, as if that guy was trustworthy at all. Next thing, he bankrupted you in about 5 minutes.
Oh, that was brutal. I'm still bleeding. All right, guys, we're going to get out of here. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. I'm going to go play some Gears of War. Maybe these guys will join me.
Drew wants to play Gears of War.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
That's on Xbox Live.
Not me. Add Stefan.
Yeah, later.
Have a good Sunday.
Later.
Later.
See ya.
Okay, this sucks. Yo, Lavender Goobs, what the fuck?
song makes my vagina wet.
Yeah.
I like to apologize for leaving music later. We'll never do it again.
I've been shit all week. I have nothing left to say about the guy.